Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
Big news. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. dropping out of the race on Friday, backing Donald Trump for president. That's a big deal. We have some audio for you from Trump. Just wrapped up his rally in North Carolina and talked about the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the jobs that they have not created this administration. And they are lying. They've been lying. It's more gaslighting of the American people. More gaslighting. Also, Donald Trump Jr. is going to stop by the show a little bit later today as well. So I'm excited for that. We got a lot going on. And, yeah, you know, this is a crazy place. They have maggots in the breakfast food. So the FBI is now investigating after maggots were found in a DNC delegate's breakfast. Maggots were found in the breakfast of delegates attending the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. The FBI is investigating if it was intentional. Well, you know, maggots are always around decomposing corpses, so I'll just leave it at that. Hey, earlier today I had a chance to sit down with Congressman Mike Waltz of Florida. He's a Green Beret, and we talked about a number of different issues relevant to Pennsylvania and about the assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump. So this is from the press conference at Trump Tower in Chicago earlier today. Take a listen. All right, here with Congressman Mike Waltz from Florida. Great to see you, Congressman.
Yeah, good to see you. Thanks.
Thanks for making time today. You talked a lot about energy today, energy independence for America. Day one, drill, baby, drill. Pennsylvania, fracking, which Kamala Harris has said she wants to end. She hasn't officially said she doesn't want to end it. How bad is the attempts to end fracking for our energy independence?
Well, it's not just our own economy. It's our geopolitical security as well. Not only has this administration gone to war on the permitting and licensing processes, whether it's fracking, drilling, shale up in Canada at the Keystone XL pipeline that they canceled, it's been a full-on war on American energy. That has led to, coupled with massive federal spending, the inflation crisis that we're in. So bottom line, you unleash American oil and gas, which, by the way, is cleaner than most of the rest of the world. You not only solve our inflation problem, you not only solve much of our economic problem, but you dry up Putin's war machine and you dry up Iran's war machine. You know, the old saying that Russia's a gas station with nukes.
Yeah.
You drive down the global price of oil by increasing American supply and exports, and he's not only as you dry up his war machine, he's economically on his back foot. You get that price of oil down below about $55 a barrel, and they literally can't afford to fight anymore. And oh, by the way, Iran too, which is fueling everything that's going on in the Middle East. So it is, we are blessed to have it, but we have an administration that for ideological reasons is at war with it.
And then you think about the ban on liquid natural gas exports, too. I mean, those.
Yeah. You layer onto that. I had lunch with the prime minister of Lithuania, small Baltic state that Russia has a bullseye on. And she said, look, you asked us to stop buying Russian gas and start buying yours. We did. They now buy 85% of their gas through the terminals in Louisiana and Texas that now have an export ban. It is so. She said, what do you want me to do? I've got to go back to Russia. It's just the most asinine, backwards thing I've ever seen. But it's all because of this climate obsession. And look, we all want a clean environment. I think there's some real debates around the science. But at the end of the day, when that's the driver of your policy and you suppress American natural resources, and then you shift billions in taxpayer dollars to buy Chinese-made solar panels, Chinese-made wind turbines that not only cannot power our current economy, can't power the economy of the future. An AI search takes about 30 times the amount of energy as a typical kind of Google search. The data centers, the power, the servers that you need to power the economy of the future can't be run on wind and solar, period.
You signed a letter. You're one of the 50. I mean, you're a Green Beret.
Yeah.
One of the 50 who questioned Tim Walz's valor, stolen valor, no question about it. How concerning is this to the American people?
Well, I could tell you it is a slap in the face of the veterans community. He didn't do what was needed to be done to be a command sergeant major, period. He should be proud of his service. Fine. But if you're so proud of it, why are you lying about it? He was demoted to master sergeant, and that's how he should be describing himself. And to a lot of people who say apples and oranges, it's a big deal to us. It is stolen valor for those who served in the command sergeant major rank and did what it took to retire from it. But also, I commanded a unit in the National Guard as a commander, as a person in leadership. When you're called, you go. And he absolutely knew, according to the people in his own unit. Look, I think the bigger issue is that this was Harris's first major decision.
Right.
And this is who she went with. She would likely be the only person in the room with any military experience at all. A heartbeat from the commander in chief, and you have someone who's fraudulently lied about it and allowed people hundreds of times, journalists, people introducing them as events, what have you, misrepresent it, and he just allowed it to happen.
I think there's another issue too, and that's, you know, Pennsylvania, where we broadcast from, out of Philadelphia, must-win state, right?
Right.
Here's a guy claiming to use his military experience to try to take away the rights of other people by saying, I carried these weapons of war in war, which he did not do, and then to try to restrict people's Second Amendment freedoms and liberties.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And by the way, I carried a weapon of war, in actual combat.
Yeah. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I think that's a great point and well said. When you are quoting that experience and lying about it as a matter of credibility for a policy position, you're just not only misrepresenting yourself, you are misleading and lying to the American people, and you're not worthy of the trust they put in you.
The Secret Service, obviously, Butler, PA, a lot of questions around that. I still have a lot of questions around it.
The more we dig into it, the more questions I have.
Right?
I mean, right? Like, how did he make these IEDs? How was he searching and getting that information, and it never popped? How did the FBI let that happen? What was he planning to do with them? What was his motivation? I'm not convinced that he acted alone. I don't know how they came to that conclusion so quickly. I mean, we're very quick to say that when we know so little, and we just had an active Iranian plot thwarted, where a Pakistani-born national with ties to Iran put down payments on hitmen to take Trump out before he was arrested. So this isn't just an isolated incident, one-time thing that we need to get answers on. These are ongoing plots right now as we speak, and I don't think the Secret Service, certainly not DHS under Mayorkas, is instilling confidence in the American people that Trump is safe.
And you mentioned today, well, even Joe Scarborough said that this morning on Morning Joe. He said, if I were Trump, I wouldn't trust the Secret Service. I mean, it's Joe Scarborough saying that, right? And you mentioned this
kid. And yet he's out there doing an outdoor rally today.
I know.
Right?
You mentioned this kid had these encrypted phones. Overseas encrypted phones, right?
Well, they were described to us by the FBI as platforms. Mm-hmm. So, look, if you have a WhatsApp or Signal account, those are U.S. companies. Those are hosted in the United States. You can get access to them here. Why did he need them in Belgium, New Zealand, and Germany? Three different countries, three different platforms, fully encrypted. What was that all about? We don't know yet.
Yeah, I hope we get some answers. Congressman, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right.
All right, as we continue along here at the Democrat National Convention, one of the worst presidents of all time, certainly by far worst two-term president, is Woodrow Wilson. And as I've said to you many, many times, I will stop at the Woodrow Wilson rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike, but I may or may not choose to take care of business on the sign that has his name on it versus actually going inside the rest stop. He's just that bad. He's the worst of the worst. And when it comes to freedom of speech, which even the modern Democrat Party hates, Woodrow Wilson is one of the absolute worst. Joining me now to discuss, Robert Korn Revere, chief counsel for FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, right here in Philadelphia, of course. The topic, Woodrow Wilson may be America's worst ever president, all caps, for free speech. Hey, Robert, thanks for joining us here. We're at the DNC, but I assume you're back in Philly. First of all, is it Wiz or Provolone? What do you prefer?
Actually, I'm not in Philly. I'm in Washington, D.C., in our office here.
Oh, all right. So then you can dodge the question. That's fine.
I can, yes.
Because it's a controversial one, and you're going to make enemies on both sides. So good for you for dodging it. Wilson is the worst. And, you know, in case anyone doubts it, I mean, he is the godfather of modern-day progressivism, and the Democrat Party still is the same party it was when he was president, no doubt about that. But give us some of the highlights of why Wilson is the worst.
Well, he presided over one of the worst suppressions of freedom of speech in American history. During his administration, Congress passed and his administration enforced the Espionage Act, which prohibited anyone making or conveying false reports or false statements with the intent to interfere with the operation of the military. Of course, that was very broadly defined. But if that wasn't enough, Congress came back the next year and passed an amendment, the Sedition Act of 1918, that made it a crime punishable up to 20 years in prison simply to use abusive language about the form of government of the United States or the Constitution, or to say anything that might impede the draft, or even to display the flag of any foreign enemy. So between those two congressional enactments and a very muscular administration, they prosecuted over 2,000 people during that period.
2,000 people. And were those convictions upheld?
Well, over 1,000 were convicted. And I'll give you an extreme example, just to give you an idea of how bad this was. One person who was prosecuted and convicted was a filmmaker named Robert Goldstein. He made a film called The Spirit of 76, which was a celebration of the American Revolution. You might wonder why someone like that would be prosecuted, and you still might wonder about it once you hear the story. And that is, it showed images of British soldiers committing wartime atrocities during the Revolution. And as a consequence of that, the Justice Department argued that this would cause people to question our allies in the war, Great Britain. And as a result of that, this was a violation of the Espionage Act. Goldstein was convicted and sentenced to 10 years in prison for making a film celebrating the American Revolution.
That is, Wilson is he was a freaking monster. He really was. I mean, that's just completely outrageous. 10 years? Please tell me that conviction was overturned on appeal, please.
It was not.
Oh, my God.
And one of the reasons why the government was able to get away with these kinds of prosecutions is because there was no constitutional guardrail at the time. The Supreme Court had not yet accepted any cases on any First Amendment topic, let alone on these two laws, until 1919, when the court took up four different cases looking at this. One of them, the first of them, involved people who simply were passing out pamphlets to try and oppose the draft. And what it did was quote the language of the 13th Amendment prohibiting slavery and asked Americans to stand up for their rights. They were convicted, the people who disseminated that, and that opinion was unanimous. It was written by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, and it was followed within a week by two additional cases, all of which were simply criticisms of the war or the war effort.
That's amazing. So an American citizen who has the right under the First Amendment to say the draft is slavery, which is something a lot of people believe, would go to prison for expressing that point of view. You know, it's funny, Robert, you mentioned, and Robert Cornevier is with me from FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. The topic is Woodrow Wilson may be America's worst ever president for free speech. You mentioned the guardrails weren't there, but the First Amendment was there. But Wilson knew, I guess, he could get away with this since there had been no real challenges to this. He also went after reporters, too, right? Members of the press?
Oh, yeah, he went after reporters. He also arrested suffragettes for protesting in front of the White House seeking to get the right to vote for women. There were really very no limits because there had been no cases establishing First Amendment case law at the time. And it was only when the fourth of these Espionage Act cases, actually this was one under the Sedition Act, came to the United States Supreme Court, the convictions were still overheld, but at this point, Oliver Wendell Holmes began to have second thoughts about whether or not the government should be given this power, and he dissented and wrote that certainly Congress can't pass laws to prohibit any efforts to change the mind of the country. And he basically said that we really should rely on the marketplace of ideas. He said that our own conduct and the ultimate good is really better reached by free trade in ideas. And that idea that he expressed in 1919 finally caught on, and the courts after that, and it took about another decade, but finally the courts started to create and fashion First Amendment doctrine that began to protect these essential freedoms.
Now, the mindset of somebody who does this, and this is why I think Woodrow Wilson is absolutely the worst second-term president, a two-term president this country's ever had, without question, because he has a long history. And you guys at Fire have written a lot about Wilson and why he's the worst. I mean, a lot of conservative and libertarian writers have written about why Wilson is the worst. But the free speech stuff, kind of, because he did so many awful things, kind of sometimes gets lost in the shuffle. So I'm glad we're focusing on this aspect of it. He wanted no dissent whatsoever with his policies, right? None whatsoever. He was a tyrant.
Well, he certainly was when it came to freedom of speech, and his attorney general at the time, Thomas Gregory, was right there with him. And he encouraged people to, as vigilantes, to crack down on any kind of dissent, and fostered groups or like the American Protective League that at the time had over 200,000 members. And they were to fan out and listen for any disloyal statements out there in the public and report them.
So rat on your friends and neighbors sounds like a lot of what they did during COVID, right? I mean, it sounds very, very familiar.
Well, it sounds a lot of like what happened with the Stasi in East Germany.
And that, too. Yes, no doubt about it. So basically, Woodrow Wilson, who ran on keeping America out of the European war, gets elected president and then does a complete flip on that and then winds up prosecuting people who didn't want America to go into the war in Europe. So, I mean, theoretically, he also probably locked up a lot of people who may have voted for him under the premise of keeping America out of the European war.
I have no idea how people voted.
Yeah.
What I can say is that one of the reasons why I think he felt it was necessary to whip up this kind of crackdown on dissent was that America entered World War I without having been attacked by a foreign nation, as what happened with World War II.
Right.
And so because there was the possibility that public sentiment was going to sour on the war effort, he felt it was necessary to really crack down on any form of dissent.
And didn't he also use a lot of propaganda, too? Wasn't he a big fan of that, of trying to make people believe that the war was a good thing? I mean, they had a whole government operation in that department, too, didn't they?
Oh, absolutely. And that was sort of the birth of modern advertising.
Mm-hmm. From the guy who screened Birth of a Nation from the White House with the KKK. Imagine that. Robert Korn Revere, for those that don't know and think that the legacy of guys like Woodrow Wilson doesn't persist to today, I mean, a lot of this notion of saying, you know, you're not a patriot if you oppose war, if you speak out against the government during a time of war. I mean, it really came to rise then. This was the first time that America had been in an overseas conflict where we had not been attacked, to your point earlier, in a much different scenario than World War II. I mean, this was a new way of thinking where, you know, if you disagreed with the government, you were not a patriot. I mean, this kind of set the table for this.
Well, it did, and it really stressed the importance for having three branches of the government, not just a all-powerful executive.
Which he thought he was.
Or which he thought he was, and he had a compliant Congress, and it was during wartime. And that's when we have to rely on the courts more than ever to put a check on this kind of unbridled power. And because there had been no cases at the Supreme Court that addressed these things before that time, you know, we'd gone 141 years before the Supreme Court finally started finding for First Amendment rights. We had all of the controversies during the 19th century that happened, ranging from President Andrew Jackson wanting to prohibit the mailing of abolitionist literature, to Abraham Lincoln issuing an executive order to jail what he saw were disloyal newspaper editors and reporters. All of that happened in American history before the Supreme Court really stepped in and started creating some constitutional guardrails.
But despite all of that, Woodrow Wilson still gets the trophy for being the worst.
Well, he certainly does in the 20th century. And finally, a lot of these abuses are what led to the courts finally getting involved and creating a body of First Amendment law.
Yeah, it's just amazing that's what it took to have happen, right? Robert Gordon Revere, Chief Counsel for FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. They fight for the First Amendment. They fight for your freedom of speech. Woodrow Wilson may be America's worst ever president for free speech. While I have you, any big First Amendment cases you guys are actively working on right now?
Well, we're working on cases across the waterfront. Rich, as you may know, FIRE, up until the last couple of years, focused entirely on free speech issues on college campuses. Now we focus on free speech issues in general in society. And so we're involved in all aspects of First Amendment law, from dealing with campus speech issues to dealing with political speech, as well as regulations affecting social media. So we're quite busy at this time.
I bet you are. I bet the fun never stops. Well, if anyone ever needs you guys at FIRE, go to thefire.org, thefire.org. Thanks for the excellent article on Woodrow Wilson. I hate him, so I enjoyed this very, very much. And I've enjoyed this interview very, very much, and I appreciate you coming on the show.
Well, thanks, Rich. It's been a pleasure.
All right, Robert Gordon Revere. Appreciate it. There, my sounder, Andrew. That's
the Rizzioli Show on Talk Radio 1210.
You got it.
PhD.
All right, I got more voicemails from Mama Zioli to play you. I do want to quickly play a Trump cut for you. Trump mentioned the job numbers that have been manipulated earlier today in his rally in North Carolina. He addressed the Bureau of Labor Statistics, admitting that 818,000 jobs that Kamala and Joe Biden claim to have created do not exist. This is former and future President Trump today in North Carolina. Cut 30.
Before we begin, I want to address the massive scandal around the revised job numbers that were just announced this morning. A little while ago, just before I came up, I got to see them. And it really isn't a revision. It's a total lie. Total lie. There's never been any revision like this. They wanted it to come out after the election, but somehow it got leaked. It got leaked. Government leaks, too. The Harris-Biden administration has been caught fraudulently manipulating job statistics to hide the true extent of the economic ruin that they've inflicted on America. The new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that the administration padded the numbers with an extra, listen to this one, 818,000 jobs that don't exist. So they said they existed, and they never did exist. They built them up so that they could say what a wonderful job they're doing. No, we've never had numbers like this.
That's right. All right, we'll talk more about that with our buddy EJ and Tony a little bit later in the show today. But that's the big story of the day, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, 856-786-2020, 856-786-2020, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, VeneriaDental.com. And, you know, we all love summer, right? I know I do, because I love the beach. But the beach isn't just for the summer. In fact, the beach, and in particular, Cape May, is absolutely gorgeous in the fall. The crowds are gone. The weather's great. And we'll be back there live for our next live show on Friday, September 6th. So mark your calendar and come out and see us. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful show and a wonderful, wonderful day. And the Grand offers special midweek packages so you can enjoy the beach without breaking the bank. Stay two nights, get 10% off. Stay three nights, get 10% off and $55 a night in resort credits. Five nights there gets you 10% off and $65 a night in resort credits that can be used at Hemingway's for food and drinks or at the gift shop where you can take your family on a whale watching boat cruise before Democrats kill them all with their windmills. The Grand offers guest rooms, suites, and townhomes equipped with kitchenettes, and they have two huge heated pools, one outdoor and one indoor. I'm telling you, the Grand is my happy place for a reason. You will not be disappointed when you book your stay with them. And if you want to do an event, whether it's a beachfront wedding, baby shower, bridal shower, corporate retreat, either way, the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, well, they'll take great care of you. 800-257-8550. Just ask, talk to my friend Caitlin. She'll plan that incredible event for you. She's a certified wedding planner. She's been written up as being one of the absolute best of the best. 800-257-8550 or visit them online at grandhotelcapemay.com. And we'll see you there Friday, September 6th.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
But the voters will hold Kamala and Joe accountable for this November when I take office, and they're going to be held accountable for what they've done to this country. Right? Thank you. I will ask for the resignations of every single senior military official who touched the Afghanistan disaster. I want their resignations immediately. And I want them on the desk in the Oval Office, the Resolute desk. I want them on at 12 o'clock, Inauguration Day, everybody involved with that disaster. When you have a disaster so stupid as that, that caused us such problems, you don't know what that's done to the reputation of our country, the Afghanistan disaster. This house cleaning will be a signal to the entire world and America military and everybody else. They want people to be held accountable for failure and incompetence. And it's just not acceptable that something like that could happen.
Democrat National Convention. Thank you, Andrew. You can pop that down for me, buddy. I want to welcome to the show to get her reaction, Dr. Victoria Coates, former Deputy National Security Advisor and the Vice President of the Davis Institute, for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. She's Philadelphia's own, of course, and author of the book Winning the War in Israel, Inside the Battle for the Jewish State and America. Dr. Coates, what do you think of what the future president just said there?
Well, I mean, Rich, what a contrast with the nonsense that is going on in Chicago. I'm sorry that you and Matt have to be captive there all week and witness this personally. I hope you don't catch anything, but it's so light on substance and so just deliberately shying away from any topic, the sorts of which the former and, as you say, future president touched on today, notably Israel. They haven't said the word Israel from the podium. Doug Emhoff didn't say Israel. They're terrified their people are going to riot. So they're not even mentioning the fact that a third of our Navy assets are surrounding Israel. Our young men and women are in harm's way to protect Israel, as they should be, from Iran. And they're not even mentioning it. So the Trump speech was amazing. He hit all of the topics that I would have recommended. They think the way he made news on Ukraine, gave some insight into where his thinking was on how to get, really, he said during the presidential transition, to a deal, was absolutely correct. You lower the crushing economic sanctions on Russia that we can do, which have secondary effects on China, which means they're going to be incentivized to wrap this up. That gives you leverage over Russia. And I think, you know, that's how you get to a good outcome. I thought what he said on energy was extremely important for each and every Pennsylvanian listening to your show this afternoon. I mean, that is a help is on the way message. I think Senator Vance's op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today on the topic was spot on and great for our state. And then finally, he was good and tough on China. And I think between those, you know, those highlights, there was a lot of other meat there, but it was comprehensive. It was the agenda for the second term, and I think you heard a lot of cheering around the halls of Heritage.
Excellent. That's great to hear, Dr. Victoria Coates. And as far as, you know, the disastrous and fatal withdrawal from Afghanistan, which cost the lives of 13 service members, and Kamala Harris said, you know, she was the last person in the room, and Dana Bash on CNN, Dana said to her, you know, and you're good with this? And she said, yeah, I'm good with it. So she owns it. And the Trump campaign today, they had a press conference at Trump Tower here in Chicago. They showed us several new ads that they're going to be rolling out starting today, as a matter of fact, where they use those words that the vice president said, that she was the last person in the room, and she's good with it.
Yeah, well, I would say Comrade Kamala, which is my favorite nickname to date. It sums it up perfectly.
Comradala. If you want to put it together, you could do Comradala.
Comradala. dear Comrade should be the first one to be fired. I 100% agree with what he said about holding people accountable. So he can have the good fortune to be the one who not only relieves Secretary Blinken and Jake Sullivan and Lloyd Austin from their perches, but also all of the careers who participated in that should be dismissed as well. And I think that will go a long way to removing that stain on our nation's honor.
Dr. Coates, let's talk, though. I mean, this person who is advising Kamala Harris on foreign policy is a person named Philip Gordon, Kamala Harris's foreign policy guru. Tell us about this person and who this person is.
How long do we have?
That's up to you, my friend. I'm stuck here in this hellhole, so I'm here till Thursday at 7. Okay. So
I have a lot of views on Philip Gordon. So I first encountered Philip Gordon when he was Obama's senior coordinator for the Middle East on the NSC in his second term, and he and I wound up in Israel together in July of 2014, coincidentally, not on the same trip. And I was there on a congressional education staff trip, and he was there to give remarks at Herzliya, and it was a very dramatic time, almost exactly 10 years ago, when Israel had a terrible Hamas terrorist attack in which three young boys, were abducted in West Bank and murdered on audio tape. It's kind of an eerie prelude to October 7th, and they strung it out. They didn't tell the families they were dead. They tried to do a hostage swap. Eventually, the bodies were discovered. It was every ghoulish thing about Hamas with which we are now so painfully familiar. So I went to the shiva of one of the boys who was a dual U.S. American citizen, and Gordon decided he would go to Herzliya to lecture the Israelis on how, if at this just very painful moment as they were about to launch a military operation against Gaza, that they needed to compromise with the Palestinians and reward them with a state, or else the United States would no longer be able to stand with Israel. I've linked to the speech on my Twitter feed, so it's not my language, it's his, that we would not be able to prevent them from being isolated. And oh, what's more, we would start to question their nature as a democracy. So that was the language that he was using in 2014. That language has started to come out of the vice president's mouth. And there was a leak last week that when the president gave his speech in May, when he announced his genius idea for a ceasefire, he was actually going to give a version of that speech. They use Phil Gordon's language about, you know, the two paths that are coming. Israel has to choose and make a decision. And, you know, that there are going to be these dire consequences if they don't choose the way Phil Gordon wants them to choose. And that is, I bet you dollars to donuts, what's going to come out of the vice president's mouth tomorrow night if she even talks about the situation in the Middle East. If she will revert to that, it is deeply damaging. When I was in Israel in 2014 and this happened, you could just feel a chill go through the country that the most senior person from the administration, that was their message on the eve of this war. So this is a terrible, terrible signal of what might be coming if she becomes president.
There's a terrible thing that was said by Judy Woodruff, who suggested that Trump and Netanyahu are withholding the return of hostages. Well, basically, Netanyahu is to help Trump politically. There's no basis for that. There's no evidence to that whatsoever. But nevertheless, it's something that she said this morning at the press conference. One of the first things that the Trump campaign asked for was for her to apologize for suggesting such a horrific thing that could be done like that.
No, it's just obscene. And Judy Woodruff knows better. You know, nobody wants those hostages back more than Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, this is searingly painful. I'm sure she has not been to Israel since October 10th. I have been. everybody in the country is desperate to get them back. It was awful this week when the six bodies were recovered of the hostages who had been murdered. They were alive when they took them back, and then they killed them. One of them was a peace activist who used to drive Gazan children into Israel to get medical treatment. That's who they killed. And so the desperation to get them back is so strong that the majority of the hostage families keep saying, do not endanger the war effort to bring them back. They wouldn't want that. They want us to win. They know we have to win or this will happen again. And I think that is what the prime minister is trying to balance. President Trump has been nothing but respectful of the hostage families. They're not getting a single word or a mention from anybody, from Barack Obama to Joe Biden this week. And I'm sure we won't get anything from Kamala Harris. But President Trump has been careful to say the names, to raise the Americans specifically, which of course has to be his top priority, but to mention all of them. And Judy Woodruff should just be ashamed.
I agree. And, you know, if you want to follow Dr. Coates, by the way, and you should on social media, she's on X at Victoria Coates, where you can see the link to Kamala Harris's foreign policy guru. And she has some screenshots of some of those tweets. So make sure you take a look at that. I think it's very, very important to do that. And the other point I wanted to ask you is, for those of us that were not able to listen to Trump's rally today in North Carolina, where he spoke, I believe it was North Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. What did he say regarding Ukraine so that we can understand what his thoughts are on that? Because there was a point that was made today again at the press conference, that, you know, if Trump becomes president, this war is not going to continue. We've heard nothing from the Democrats about ending this war with Ukraine and Russia. Nothing. There's nothing about peace talks, nothing about brokering even a sit down. Nothing. Joe Biden brags about the fact that he's not talked to Vladimir Putin in 3 years.
Yeah. No, well, their only theory of the case is as much as it takes, as long as it takes, which it sounds to me like a recipe for an endless war. And what President Trump has said is he will bring this to a conclusion in 24 hours. You know, we might give him 48, but I think the point is that not that he just is planning to surrender to Vladimir Putin and hand him Ukraine. The point, but he hasn't articulated what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And what he said today is, if you invade a country with whom we are friendly and we don't want you to do it, the message to you is going to be, you are no longer going to do business with the United States, which could include everything up to being cut off from the Federal Reserve. And we're going to put 100% tariffs on your goods. And so that is a message to Vladimir Putin that your economy will essentially cease to exist as you know it. And, oh, by the way, China, if you're complicit on this and there are secondary sanctions associated, you're going to receive the same treatment. So how about we wrap this up? And this is what, you know, I've been arguing for, not that he's been listening to me, but 2 years ago, I had a piece with Marshall Billingsley on this topic saying we can do this if we are very serious financially and do a similar program to what President Trump imposed on the Iranians. And he did raise that as well today. So essentially he is articulating a mechanism to force Putin to the table with leverage over Putin. Obviously he has leverage over Ukraine as well. That's how you get to a deal. But the idea that the left is pushing that he'll just surrender to Putin and hand Ukraine to Putin, you know, that's ridiculous. And that's what he was saying today.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. She is the former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump and the Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. The other thing I wanted to address with you is a story that you were kind enough to send us, although I kind of wish you hadn't, because I didn't think this kind of stupidity could exist in the world today. But nevertheless, let me read you the headline of the story, and then I'll before I get to that, Nord Stream, the pipeline, the idea that Zelensky knew that they were going to blow it up, the idea that Zelensky gave the okay that they were going to blow it up, and the idea that he tried to talk them out of it, I guess, or the CIA tried to talk him out of it, and that he gave the order for them to not go through with it, but they went through with it anyway. What do you make of all that, Dr. Coates?
I mean, I don't know. The folks I've talked to, particularly in the Baltics, who would have the intelligence, have been pretty emphatic that they think it's Russia. But this whole thing just reads like the Keystone Cops. It reads like the Ukrainians going off and doing their thing. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. The CIA couldn't influence them. And it's my concern about what's going on right now, Rich, with the Ukrainians going hundreds of miles into the Kursk region, which is part of Russia.
Right.
Not that I object to anyone attacking Russia. You know, they're not very sensitive about other people's borders. But I wonder, you know, how much guidance is being provided by Washington and who in Washington. I mean, the president's on vacation, the vice president's, you know, busy being coronated. And so, you know, is this the drift to World War III? Again, as I said, I don't blame the Ukrainians. And maybe this is a genius masterstroke on their part to gain more leverage. But it doesn't seem like anybody in the U.S. has much influence over what's being done with our weapons. I mean, Putin has a ground then to say, hey, they used your weapons to invade us. We consider you culpable in this invasion. Maybe that's okay. Maybe it isn't. But nobody seems to be looking at it strategically. So that's my concern about the Nord Stream reporting.
And what about the story that came out, I guess, a day or two ago, where Biden has given the order for the country to be prepared for potential nuclear strikes with Russia, China, and North Korea?
Yeah, that's some sort of leaked strategy document from March in which they were preparing for a contingency in which we would be potentially the target of a triple nuclear strike. And interestingly, we had a Taiwanese delegation in this week who referred to it as CRINK, China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. I thought that was a good acronym.
CRINK. Easy to remember.
Anyway,
I like
CRINK.
That.
Yeah. CRINK would be attacking us collectively. I suppose you can lump the Iranians in there because they're close enough. But that's, you know, terrifying because it means that they are preparing for this kind of contingency, which makes this drift towards, you know, who knows what in Russia all the more dangerous. I mean, if we're going to get into a massive war, I would like us to be doing it soberly and for a good reason, not just because nobody was answering the phone.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not worried about it. And maybe it's because I'm not as smart as you when it comes to foreign policy or anything for that matter. or maybe it's because we don't have to worry about this because we will be dealing with the queering of nuclear weapons as part of a DEI agenda. Queer theory is also about rejecting the tenet that nuclear deterrence creates security and disarmament creates vulnerability. I don't know what the hell any of that just means. All I know is that I want to take my head, even more so than I did 5 minutes ago, and smash it against that door over there until I pass out.
Yeah,
Coates.
This is some pretty incredible reporting from Fox that broke this morning, and I had the same response, sent it to we have a quite exceptional nuclear scientist on our staff here. And I said, I've never heard about this from you. So I'm learning. But what has happened is a woman named Snea Nair, who is a great proponent of DEI and of queer theory, has been hired by the National Nuclear Security Administration. The acronym is NNSA, which is a piece of the Department of Energy. And they're remit, what these people are supposed to be doing, is building the new nuclear bombs and maintaining the arsenal that we have. That's a very specific technical skill. And I don't care if you're queer or you're not queer, if you have the credentials to participate in that very sensitive, technologically sophisticated field, then great, serve your country. But saying that you have to queer nuclear weapons, they have to be in this gender charged space, because then we can get rid of them, does not seem consistent with the mandate of the NNSA. You know, I was employed by the Department of Energy. I had a CUBE clearance, which gave me access to the NNSA. I, thank God, didn't exercise it. I'm an art historian, not a nuclear scientist, but you get to know that world. What you want are project managers. You want people who can build bombs. We are woefully behind. And Russia and China and North Korea are ramping up their production, and Iran is marching toward a bomb. And we are applying queer theory to our nuclear weapons. It defies belief, Rich.
I didn't even know that nuclear weapons had an attraction. Is it sort of like the plutonium is attracted to the uranium or something like that? I'm just trying to understand how we even get to queer theory when it comes to nuclear weapons. I really can't figure this part out.
Honestly, this is a classic don't ask, don't tell. If the nuclear weapons have a sexual orientation, I don't want to know about it. I just want them in their silos, ready to blow up the bad guys if needs be, or to deter the bad guys from trying to blow us up, which from your previous question about this nuclear posture review, you know, is a real possibility. So we have to stop this with this crazy, you know, sort of social engineering approach to the hard sciences. This is what has happened to Boeing. You know, they kept hiring all of these DEI hires rather than hiring engineers who were qualified. And now we can't get our people back from the space station. There is a direct line between these things. It's just awful.
Well, if we can get two nuclear missiles to fall in love on their way to destroying each other, maybe they could meet in the middle and blow each other up. I'm just saying, you know, like
it's
Star Wars.
Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Well said. All right, last question before I let you go, since you are a Philly girl. Wiz or provolone?
Wiz
Wit. Oh, you know what? You and David Urban, I'll tell you what, and J.D. Vance, I'm telling you, you guys are way off on this. All right, fine. Dr. Victoria Coates, you're right on everything else. Former Deputy National Security Advisor and Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Follow her on social media at Victoria Coates. Thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Of course. Travel home safe.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, listen, if you have been putting off a dentist or you need a beautiful smile, you want a beautiful smile, what are you waiting for? Go see my buddy, Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com. My whole family goes to Dr. Mike. His level of care and commitment to dental excellence is unmatched. So if you've been putting off seeing a dentist or you know you want the smile of your dreams, what are you waiting for? Reach out to him today. He's got two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Call the office at 856-786-2020, 856-786-2020, or visit VeneriaDental.com, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. You will have the smile of your dreams. You will look great. And I know this because Bridget just got a new smile with Dr. Mike Veneria. She had veneers. They need to be replaced. He put on beautiful caps for her. She looks fantastic. I mean, she always did before, but now even more so. VeneriaDental.com. For 10 years in a row, 10 consecutive years, Dr. Mike has been named as one of the most respected dentists in all of South Jersey among his peers, a master of dental implants. You will not be disappointed with Dr. Mike. 856-786-2020. 856-786-2020. Or visit VeneriaDental.com. VeneriaDental.com.